KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
We have heard a lot about teacher shortages in recent years, but interest in teaching as a career has been declining for a while.
The Philadelphia School District started the current year more than 200 teachers short. Superintendent Tony Watlington says it's a reflection of the fact that between 2011 and 2022, there was a huge drop in people seeking teaching careers.
It's a matter of this phenomenon of 71% decline in teacher certifications in the Commonwealth.
Teachers have to put up with a lot, whether it's low pay, students' behavioral problems, or getting caught in the middle of political fights.
This whole reaction about woke culture and then book banning, a lot of teachers who were passionate have lost that passion because of that.
So how do we solve this problem and get our schools back on track? I'm Matt Leon, and today on KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. We're talking with Dr. Gary Henry, Dean of the University of Delaware's College of Education and Human Development. He helped develop the school's program to train teachers in ways that fit with today's education environment and encourage more people to pursue teaching. So painting with a broad brush, how would you kind of rate the state of teaching right now as far as the job itself, the opportunities available? How would you kind of rate overall where we are?
Well, I think we're in the midst of a huge period of change for teachers and teaching across the nation, really. And the context has changed such a large amount. When we go back to the folks that many of us had in the classroom, teaching was considered a really good professional job for teachers. And a lot of women didn't pursue other opportunities that they're pursuing today. And so because they have this enriched set of opportunities, fewer and fewer of them choose to go into teaching. So to bring this kind of up to date, in the years from 2010 to 2018, across the entire country, enrollments dropped in teacher education program by 35%. But in Delaware, that drop was 60%. So the colleges and universities here in Delaware lost over half of the traditional number of folks enrolling in teacher preparation programs. There have been a lot of other changes that have gone along with this. One of them is a result of alternative entry teachers, whereas 20 to 30 years ago, most of the teachers out in the workforce were prepared through teacher education programs, four-year degrees, moving on, often getting a master's. In the past several years, we've started to hire individuals who had a college degree, but not necessarily any training in teacher preparation, the kinds of things like classroom management skills, how do we work with special education students and professionals in the classroom. One of the unforeseen consequences is that has really increased turnover. Rather than teachers going in, thinking of this as a career, being there for 30 years, retiring from teaching, we get a lot of teachers who are turning over even before their first year is done. So as we've allowed alternative teachers to enter, and some of them are great, they're terrific teachers, they really do a great job, but on average, they're more likely to leave and they're less effective than folks prepared with the traditional teacher education programs. In a large study I did in the state of North Carolina, we looked at novice teachers, and we saw that they were turning over at very high rates within their first and second years, to the extent that we were losing almost 50% of the teachers. But a lot of those were alternative entry teachers who simply were not prepared for the kind of classrooms they faced. So we've got these cross currents of alternative entry, declines in teacher education program, which has meant that we really need to step up our game in higher ed to prepare more well-prepared, highly qualified teachers to go into our public schools. And right now, we're in the process of making that conversion. So it's the context has changed substantially, Matt.
As far as those significant drops of people pursuing this, and you mentioned, you know, teaching has a much higher percentage of women than men, and 50 years ago, women didn't have the opportunities that they do now. That is obviously a part of this. But it also seems to me that you have to deal with things now as a teacher that were not on the radar 20, 30, 40 years ago. School shootings, violence in general. And then you look at how teachers have been used as political footballs, or not specific teachers maybe, but the idea of teachers, what's going on in the classroom, that I can understand. If you don't have a passion for it, that's going to push you away. And you know what? I don't need to deal with that. Are there other things you think that are at work here that are pushing people away from teaching or not staying, other than some of those things?
Yeah, we lost the competitiveness of the salaries for teachers dramatically across the country. There's been, as you referred to, a lot of politicization of the teacher workforce. This whole reaction about woke culture and then book banning. A lot of teachers who were passionate have lost that passion because of that. And then another factor in this regard, Matt, is that accountability pressures have really changed. And with No Child Left Behind, we began to label schools as chronically low performing. I did a study of 75 schools that were labeled chronically low performing, again, in North Carolina, using that state data. And what we heard in interviews with teachers was that once their school appeared on that list in their local communities, when they saw a parent or even someone who just cared about schools in the grocery store, it was no more about, oh, what are you doing in school? You know, all the things that brought them to it. It was, I saw that you're on a list of low performing schools. I was really surprised. And those teachers felt a sense of stigma, they told us, about being on that low-performing list. So some of these have been rather self-inflicted wounds imposed by the state systems of education. Some of them have been sort of the product of other social trends and conditions out there. But what it's come down to is that, by and large, a lot of people don't view teaching as an attractive profession for them that might have in a previous generation.
How much does that fact and these numbers and the fact that you talk about these teachers coming in but not staying, the effect on students, and once again, painting with a broad brush, not any specific district or anything like that, but it just seems to me that if you've got teachers that aren't comfortable or are just going through the motions or don't have that fire for it, you know, they might check the boxes as far as, yes, we did all this, the things we were supposed to do. But the learning experience is not going to be nearly what it could be, no?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And part of the reason is that teachers in a prior generation, by and large, taught the way they were taught. So they had great teachers and they wanted to replicate that experience for their students. And with the amount of training, they could come up to speed on how to teach reading using the science of reading, for instance. But more and more, with the lack of teacher preparation programs, we just have a disconnect between what the individuals should be doing in the classroom, for instance, with the science of reading or what we know about teaching mathematics, for instance. And they replicate those old school procedures rather than what research has told us about. And we also have issues that a lot of times the principals were trained in an earlier generation of curriculum and instruction. So they're not necessarily the resource that they once were for teachers who are out there in the field. It's just a compounding issue with getting up-to-date notions of teaching effectively used in the classroom.
Is there a certain level of teaching that is hurt more than others? And what I mean by that is, like, we talk about these numbers and troubles filling spots. Like, high school, is it harder than junior high or elementary school? Or is elementary the hardest? Like, is it pretty much across the board that you know, we're seeing struggles finding teachers, or is it more in specific grade areas?
So it's largely across the board now. It what has been difficult for longer in secondary STEM subjects like mathematics and chemistry and physics, but now those specific content area shortages are showing up in middle grades, so that in those junior highs or middle schools, we're seeing shortages of math teachers and science teachers. Across the board, two of the biggest set of vacancies are special ed teachers, because we really have a lot more issues, mental health issues and other issues in the classroom, and we need a lot more support for more students from the special ed. And a growing concern that started out in the elementary grades but is progressing up are multilingual or bilingual learners, kids who in their home they speak a language other than English, but they come to school to learn English and they use English primarily in the schools. Those students, we know a lot about how to support them in their language development, and they can do really well, come out of the special programs for English as a second language very quickly when they get the right support, but we're just not preparing enough of those teachers to fill the need in the classrooms in elementary schools.
I feel like there's a lot of kind of spin-off effects of this, to where fewer teachers means you have to have larger class sizes, and then larger class sizes, kids can't get the individual attention. Maybe more kids that are kind of on the margin lose interest and drop out, and it doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, this leads to, it's not just that, yes, maybe your child is not getting the absolute best instruction they can in the classroom, but it leads to a lot more problems past just kind of what they're learning in a day, no?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the issues that's really being discussed and analyzed a lot now is when that teacher leaves mid-year, they just distribute those kids in that classroom to other classrooms in the third, let's say if it's a third grade teacher who left. They send those students out. So you go from a class that might have been very manageable at 20, and now you have 28 students in the classroom. Plus, the teacher doesn't know those new 8 students. So getting them integrated and fully participating and engaged with learning in those classrooms is very difficult. Then secondly, one of the things we see all across the country, but in particular here in Delaware now, is long-term substitutes who are not necessarily prepared to be teachers. In some states, it's not required that they have a degree at all from college, but they're coming into the classroom and they're spending the full year or nearly the full year with that classroom. So what they're able to do is severely limited. So there are multiple knock-on effects. Every time one of those teachers leaves, every time there's a shortage of a professional teacher, that brings more to what the teachers who are there day to day have to be able to do. And it just the sense of being overwhelmed at work, stressed and burned out is palpable at many of these schools.
We need to take a break on KYW News Radio In Depth. We will continue our conversation with Dr. Gary Henry of the University of Delaware in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. This new year, discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on KYW News Radio In Depth, let's continue our conversation with Dr. Gary Henry, Dean of the University of Delaware's College of Education and Human Development. So when we talk about addressing this, I would think near the top of the list is better pay. Because I think, you know, a lot of teachers, people would be shocked, as someone who has a lot of teachers in his life, would be shocked at what someone in the public school system specifically gets paid in some districts to deal with 25 of your children day in and day out. Because I think pay would help paper over some of this, where you could at least say, hey, I'm making good money, good benefits, stuff like that. So we'll kind of put that as kind of a given that if we could get pay to where it needs to be. Past that, though, how do you start to address some of these things? Things that are under your control, and when I say you, I mean people that are teaching the next generation of teachers. What can you do?
So you're right that pay is a big factor. Pay is really the dominant factor, or one of the dominant factors, in choosing the profession. Once you've chosen to be a teacher, you kind of understand what the pay is, and it becomes less of an issue that you're motivated to leave, unless, of course, the salary increases and longevity increases evaporate. If that happens, of course, that's different. But what it does, and I can talk a little bit in a few minutes, if you like, about what we've done to kind of address that in our programs here at the University of Delaware. But the two other primary conditions or primary factors in teachers choosing to leave the profession are the leadership and the lack of support they get from the leadership in the schools, and what they call working conditions. That's a broad brush, but it sort of means day-to-day, how disruptive are the students in your class? The climate, do you have good collegial relationships with other teachers in that school? Or is that promoted and developed? But we see a majority of the teachers, and in a survey that's administered here in Delaware, majority of them cite leadership. And so one of the things that we found from research that I was doing in Tennessee is a big part of addressing that is including teachers and leaders in parts of the same professional development in the summer. For instance, if the school has decided they're going to work on mathematics and the teaching of mathematics as a goal, a lot of the principals, as I said earlier, will not have been trained in the current approaches to teaching mathematics that they're going to receive from groups like our School Success Center here at UD. They'll go out, hold a two-week summer institute. So what the research shows is when you put principals and principal supervisors in the same institute, two-week institute, for, let's say, the first 3 or 4 days of that institute with teachers, so they're all becoming grounded in the teaching of mathematics. And then the principals go on, and what the coaches and trainers do with the principals is teach them how to support teaching in that way on the part of their students. So when they do go into the classroom to do a walkthrough or an observation of a teacher, what can you expect to see if those teachers are using the curriculum the way it was intended to be used, while the teachers are learning, how do I use the curriculum in the way it was intended to be used? And that means that they can reinforce and support each other. And through those kinds of mechanisms, we can really make a difference, but we're by and large not doing that. So when I got here, we had a center that was really focused on training leaders and preparing leaders and working with leaders and coaching. And we had a different one that was focused on math and literacy and social studies for teachers, and they worked specifically with teachers. We brought those both together, and now they coordinate and work across so that leaders and teachers are being prepared in ways that help them reinforce each other. That's one of the ways. Another way is principals have to be able to foster collaboration on instruction. And so what do I mean by that? Teachers often draw together in professional learning communities in schools, and they talk about their instruction. They talk about assessments they've done and what the students did and did not get. And they collaborate with each other because one teacher sitting in the meeting may have been entirely successful with this part of the curriculum. Two others may not have, and they can share that and learn from each other. But the leadership has to foster that collaboration. The key to a school getting better in the large Tennessee study I was talking about is, first of all, they had hired leaders and teachers with the capacity to be effective. And then they collaborated in ways that made them effective in the classrooms.
And you mentioned specifically, I know you guys have done some stuff at Delaware. Do you want to expound on some of the work you're trying to do to address that past what you've already talked about?
I'd love to explain that. What we did was decide there's not going to be a little intervention or a program that's going to address this problem. It's too big. It's too comprehensive. It's too systemic and social in nature. So we've divided this up into four parts. One is the pipeline. So we're doing now three signature programs with Delaware high schools. For instance, we repurposed an administrative position into a high school recruiter. She'll go into all the high schools across the state multiple times a year. And what she's doing is encouraging the students there to think about becoming teachers. And we've got two other programs that really focus on high school students, which our Teachers of Tomorrow program, which I've gotten funds from private donors to support, goes out and we enroll about 40 of those juniors and seniors. We work with them one Saturday a week, and then we bring them to campus for 2 weeks in the summer so they can have an experience and see themselves as teachers. Then their senior year, we help them develop their essays and their applications for college and make sure they're getting all the support they need to actually apply. And a lot of those students, particularly those from first generation families where they're going to be the first generation college student, and minoritized individuals who are underrepresented in higher education, they tend to have these experiences and be willing to come. And we also, at that pipeline level, we sponsored the Educators Rising Conference recently. So we had 300 high school students from around the state. They came to our campus. They competed in a number of areas directly related to teaching, and they got to know each other and get a sense of camaraderie from that experience. But those programs aren't going to be enough if we have financial barriers. So one of the things I've done is started the Dean's Diversity in Education Scholarship Fund. I get private donors. And right now, we're looking at our admitted students and being able to put together packages for those who want to enroll in our teacher education programs and remove the financial barriers. We've also started to do important fundamental reviews of our curriculum to give greater access and flexibility to the UD students. And finally, on the end, we're partnering on teacher residency programs. So we've got a staff member in our Center for Excellence and Equity in Teacher Preparation who really focuses on partnering with schools and school districts. These teacher residents, it's like a medical resident that you would be familiar with if you go see a physician or are in a teaching hospital. So those students, one of the districts is paying $35,000 per year for our teacher prep majors to be in one of their classrooms for the entire school year. So they go in fall and they're there till the students are finished and take their final exams. In the spring, they get a stipend and they get health insurance. And in exchange, they agree to work in the schools for 2 years. So that gives them a place where they know they're going to have a job. They know the people they're going to be working with because they've been working in that school or school system. And it's a great way to get them started. And this year, many of the districts are also providing them the first year of their teacher retirement. So they're enrolling them as residents in the teacher retirement system. So by the time their commitment is up, they'll have 3 years already and already be close to being vested in a very nice, very well-funded teacher retirement system.
Are you optimistic overall about the future of teaching? I mean, obviously the programs you're going show the passion and show you understand the assignment, excuse the pun, as far as what is going on here. But I mean, I think this is a tough nut to crack. I think there are a lot of headwinds against teaching right now, unfortunately, that are beyond the control of teachers and educators. Are you optimistic?
I'm absolutely optimistic. I think by mentioning the word passion, I think you can hear it in my voice. You can hear it in the kind of commitments we've made. I've studied teaching and teachers and leaders in schools for many, many years. So I've done this through my research for 20 years through collaborations and with state departments of ed in North Carolina, Georgia, Texas, certainly Tennessee. And I decided 4.5 years ago when I came to UD, we have really terrific faculty, which I knew from the beginning, but we hadn't marshaled our programs in ways that could best support teachers for tomorrow. And I think we're really making inroads on doing that. And it's what gets me up every morning. It's what brings me into work. It's why I'm so happy every time I get a chance to talk to our undergraduate students and our graduate students about what we can do and how important they and their careers will be to students who really need folks trained the way they're prepared.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In-Depth, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.